I am Betsy Payette. Marilyn McCartney and I are interviewing personnel who were instrumental in developing Renfrew Museum and Park. Today is Tuesday, January 7, 1992, and Mr. William S. Bowers is being interviewed. He was an original board member and is a very knowledgeable antique authority who helped advise Mrs. Nicodemus in that area.
Okay.
Well, the genesis of Mrs. Nicodemus' idea for the Renfrew House and Grounds was conceived by, or rather, she had Leroy Maxwell as her guide, you might say, what she could do and what she couldn't do. And then after they formulated the thing, what they wanted to do, and then, of course, they appointed a board that was selected by somebody that felt had the proper know-how of what the museum needed. Like Mr. Maxwell was a lawyer, and Ed Miller, of course, he was a lifelong resident there of the place, up at Nicodemus's handyman or farm supervisor, and of course he's our secretary and so forth. And then we had Miller that died, you know. He was in on it right from the very beginning. I forget his first name.
Richard Miller.
It's Richard Miller. And then we had Helen Hoffman. She was very close to Mrs. Nicodemus, and she selected her. And so I suppose that myself and Dr. Geithner are the only two familiar with the items in the museum, that is, what they, how valuable they were and how they applied to the museum and so forth. So that's how that came about. Let's see, that takes care of, we're only five or six. She never spoke to me about it. I didn't know anything about it until they finally got around to appointing a board, and then I found that I was on it, and I agreed to give my time to it, which I have ever since. And of course, Guyton moved down to Maryland, you know, so he's off the board.
Mm-hmm.
He's, you might say, a maritime. So that's about the, she never spoke to me about what she was doing. I would just hear about it indirectly, you know, what she was doing. And all this took a year or two to get the thing together. Then after it was all gotten together, and we had the problem of having the town of Waynesboro accept it.
Yes, I remember
and,
that.
So you had to go through all that, and after that was accepted, then we might say that our appointments to the board then, we might say, were established, and then we took on from there, and then that's where Richard Miller came in, because he was borough manager then, and he was a big help for keeping the thing together. So, to say there about why she choose, why I was chosen, like Dr. Geithner, we're the only two that were familiar with the quality of the objects and how they fitted in, and because there's an awful lot of stuff there that was an accumulation of the, not only the Nicodemus, but the what is the family? Geysers. Awful lot of geyser stuff there.
Yes.
They had no bearing at all on the museum. And the borough wouldn't let us sell that. We had to store all that stuff. So that was a friction all the time, because we wanted to deaccession that stuff and they wouldn't let us, because the people on the town council didn't know beans from bananas to begin with. So as I say, well, ever since, it's been like that ever since. It's been friction all the time. Every time we wanted to do something, why, of course, you had to get permission from the Bora. And, well, anyhow, without having any misgivings about the project. Well, at that time, you didn't give it any thought. You thought it was a good idea, and you would go along with it just to see how it would unfold. So that's what happened when you just...
If you would even like to read those questions out loud and then give your answer accordingly.
Well, what was your initial reaction to the will? There was no reaction at all. Reaction to the appointment, I had no reaction to it at all, except I agreed to go along with them. And I accepted because I'm interested in any projects relating to local history. So I've written 3 books already on
it. Oh, really?
Oh, yes. Yeah, local on Franklin County architecture and gunsmiths and furniture. Mm-hmm. So, as far as I had no misgivings about the project, well, at that time, we didn't know which way we're headed. In other words, we had some rules and regulations, so we went along with them. And I said, do you have any misgivings about the project, and what were they? Well, misgivings about the project was working with the Bora. I guess that was the biggest stumbling block. Because the Bora Council didn't know a thing about the museum or its workings or anything, so that's about it. Then we accepted what was the initial view of what Brentview would become. Well, we hadn't any idea what Brentview would become because ever since it's been initial view of the Renfrew would become, of course, to begin all along the way, I guess maintenance was the prime concern, and how we were going to handle these different things that came up, like people wanted to have a wedding in the park, or they wanted to have a Civil War enactment, or they wanted to have different projects that would be local and so forth like that. And of course, I had nothing to do with that. That all concerned the park. So, let me accept what was your initial view order and you would become. Well, you couldn't figure it out because you didn't know what was going to happen. You had so many problems to solve. and has your view prevailed, or has Renfrew become something different? Yes, Renfrew has become something different. I can't say it was better or lesser or what. It's different, though, so much as that all the, besides what it was taking to maintain Renfrew, that is the buildings and the grounds and so forth like that, while we're going into now reclaiming all these buildings surrounding Renfrew, the tanning pit and the former stock house and the barn. They rebuilt the whole barn. Cost us something like $103,000 for what? And it wasn't and I tried to tell from the beginning, like other people had my view too, about the barn was just a common barn. You wouldn't have looked at it twice. Redeeming features as an early barn. It was probably erected 1830, 1840, something like that, and everything like that. But anyhow, people on the ones that were selected to push the thing along that the barn had top priority. So that went along and they completed it. So as much as some of us weren't in favor of it, nevertheless, why, you have that with any organization, that there's always a few that, somehow get what they want, that is, if they're in there pushing at it. So it's something different. Has it fallen short, perhaps, of Mrs. Nicodemus' intent or your expectation? Again, right back with Mrs. Nicodemus, the museum was her pride and joy, because she spent her whole life collecting that stuff and getting it together. And I sold her quite a few things and did a lot of work for her and everything like that. So I know how she felt about the museums. The other buildings, she never even talked about them. And then, of course, the barn came into focus whenever we needed more room for our lectures and some of our permanent exhibits that would take up a lot of space, because we didn't have that in the house. We had to have, so that's, I was agreeable to fixing up a lecture room over there at the barn and a place where we could display some of our pottery and all that sort of thing.
How long did you know Mrs. Nicodemus before Renfrew became?
Yeah, probably knew her 10 years before Renfrew was established.
And you worked with her during that time?
I sold her stuff and did her work in the house there. Can you divide Renfrew at the beginning to the present? Initial start. That's all in the Renfrew, what do you call it, this pamphlet or booklet or whatever it is they put out. That's all in there. That's how it developed. The initial start and the transition and the change of mission, all that. That's all in there. So if there's anything I can add to that, that's all well known. Having done this, relate your role in terms of most significance or most difficult or most satisfaction, even if you wish success and failure. Well, what can we do about that? Relate your role in terms of most significance. I was only a member of the board. All I had was a vote, and if I wasn't satisfied with the with the project that came up to vote on, I didn't vote for it. That's all there was to it. It wasn't carried. That's all. Another well, what problems did you foresee which proved to be problems? I can't say I saw any problems. I didn't foresee any problems that would prove to be problems. except the problem of developing a park. So, which, as I say right from the very beginning, I really don't have any reason or right to criticize it, the development of the park and those that pushed the park, because I wasn't selected by Mrs. Nicodemus to work with the park. Mm-hmm. I was chiefly on the museum end of it there, and that had nothing to do with the park. Mm-hmm. And then when you're talking about the park, then you're talking about all the things that went with the park there, these nature walks and weddings in the park and these Civil War jamborees and all these projects, soap boiling and apple butter making and so forth like that. That's another whole story that I didn't participate in at all. Mm-hmm. That's another thing.
Right.
So, but the thing of it is, I can very easily see that laying the park aside. If you just have the museum to deal with, you were curtailed because there wasn't that much to do with the museum. What could you? The collection was already formed, and every now and then we were given something or bought something, maybe once or twice a year, an item or something like that. So about the only thing that we could do would be rearrange the museum, you know, and change the rooms around and so forth like that, which didn't constitute much of a job. So I think that was why we had two or three curators before this Jim Smith is here now. And I think that's why they gave up and left. They just couldn't see any daylight with museum work there.
Have they sold or rebought many antiques in the past several years?
Well, we haven't sold a nickel's worth.
You haven't sold any of the...
No, we haven't sold any of the stuff. You know, that stuff's all stored away. That was the Geiser Nicodemus family stuff. That's stored, you know.
And those things are still being stored.
Those things are still touched in town council, you know, so they're not going to touch anything.
Now, where do they store those?
Up on the third floor of the barn.
Oh, okay.
Now, these are stored because they would not fit in with the concept of
museum. They're all late stuff, Victorian and brass beds and what are you going to, Empire Bureaus. What I mean, it was just out of keeping with the museum. No place, no way.
So, can you give us a little background as to how you developed your interest and knowledge of antiques? What you've been
I was born
done?
With it.
A lot of people aren't born with that sense of antiques,
but
that's great.
I was at IY. Every, all the other kids were out to basketball and football and etc. and so forth. I was around visiting the antique dealers and the cabinet makers and all that sort of thing. I knew what everybody in town was doing, and who they were and how good they were at their work, you know, and so forth and so forth.
And Wallace Nutting's name was mentioned when your name
well,
was
I went
mentioned.
Up there. I worked up there over a year.
Now,
yeah.
Now, can you give us an idea about Wallace Nutting, what he has done? A lot of people are not really familiar with his work and his name. What is he an expert in?
Well, of course, his chief claim to fame was his pictures, that he went out and took these. Well, that was the time before color photography. And he would go out and photograph these farm scenes and colonial interiors of houses and so forth. And he'd print them on matte paper. Then he would have girls put in the color. And he made a terrific amount of money on that. Then along with the side, he liked the furniture better. And I think he lost money on every piece of furniture he made. He made it too well. And time was no object. Well, like you had said, well, if it's going to take this, it's going to take it. That's all. And forget about the time. That's the way I want it.
And you worked with him in making furniture for about a year?
Uh-huh. I had big expectation of staying up there. I moved up there whole, you know, family and everything moved up there to Framingham.
Massachusetts?
Yeah.
Framingham, Massachusetts.
Yeah, moved up there. And as I say, then business got worse and worse. Well, he offered me a job when things were booming there for one quarter, you might say. And he was very encouraged with it, so that's what. And I had been corresponding with him for a couple of years before, and he knew that I wanted to come up there and work for him, you know. So he sent for me, so I went up there, and they say the whole bottom then fell out of the thing, and I came back home here then. And that was
now, what year are we talking about?
1940.
In the 40s.
Around 39. 1940 then. He died in 41, or was it 42? Well, anyhow, that's when he died. If he could have hung out for a couple more years, he'd have saw the biggest, he would have seen the biggest boom that we've ever known. And people having money to spend and buying nice, new, fine things.
And then you were helpful in getting furniture for Mrs. Nicodemus that she was collecting for
use. Every now and then I would see something that I would feel, well, Mrs. Nicodemus would be interested in this. This ought to fit in so and so and so and like that. So I sold her a few things. And then besides that, why I reclaimed, but fixed up quite a number of pieces that that needed attention.
Are there any pieces in the museum now that were original, other than Mrs. Nicodemus's collections, others that could be traced back to that house?
No. Nothing. Not a stick. No, when they moved in there, it was a dilapidated, barren, old stone house that needed work all over.
And what period furniture is there now?
It's sort of a mixture. They got federal, they got some real early pieces like a great leg table there and a couple of, and quite a number of Windsor chairs and some nice Bollinger pieces, a secretary and a pair of card tables and a couple of girondoles and triple set of Sheridan banquet tables and a sideboard to match it. And then upstairs are some federal style bureaus that with a French feature, you know, and inlaid, and some late four poster beds and some. The whole house is sort of a mixture.
Talking about the furniture that.
Yeah, but
you
the furniture,
bought.
The whole house is a mixture. If she liked it, she bought it. And I guess it leans towards the Bollinger Federal period, you might say, more than early Chippendale, you might say. And another thing that she leaned towards were blanket chests. She must have six or eight pretty nice decorated Dutch blanket chests. Those kind are decorated, you know, and dated and so forth like that. Now, a lot of those things that she had gotten from a collector that died, that she knew real well, and every now and then he'd sell her something. And then, of course, her main love was at John Bell Pottery. She had a huge collection of that, which we had to fix up a place over in the barn to display that properly. Not only pottery, also Dutch china, that spatterware, and chiefly that spatter, and You've been in there, haven't you?
Yes.
You've seen what
yes, many times.
And all that sort of thing like that. So those are things that the pottery and china and blanket chests and looking glasses she leaned towards pretty heavily. So other than that, why, it's sort of a mixture. But it all fits together pretty well, and it makes it interesting to have all these different periods put together.
Now, is there one room that would be more typical of the era when the house was built, of the date of the house, that would fit in most with the date of the house and the furniture? Any special room or area?
No, I wouldn't say no. In fact, most of the furniture predates the house. So if you want to keep it in the date of the house, you're getting into the pre-empire period. It was heavy, you know. Like your four-poster beds with the heavy posts, you know.
Yes.
And of course, Windsor chairs fit in most any place, and then another thing we had a problem with there with the museum, of course that's over now and forgotten about and everything, is that there was, we had a lot of flack from the outside about keeping things in the museum that belonged to the Nicodemuses and the Geysers, which had no place in the museum. So particularly that one room there that had Nick, that was Nick the horseman, you know, like that. So all his loving cups and ribbons and all that sort of thing now. Well, that's all right, but to devote a whole room to that, well, that's couldn't see anything to that. So anyhow, there was problems like that that went along that you had to somehow solve. I think right now things are pretty well they're not either ironed out, because every now and then I go over there, I don't attend the meetings regularly, but when I do go, I find that there's a lot of things that should have been that we agreed, the meeting that I was there before last, to change, and they hadn't been touched. You know, that is rearranged. The rooms are just sort of helter-skelter, you might say. That is, if you've got a blank space in the wall, anything will go in there. That's a thing. Our curator there, Jim Smith's a good guy, and he's pushing along. He's doing a good job in keeping Renfrew before the public and getting people to come out, you know, and enjoy it, so forth like that. But as far as he doesn't make a study of any of the stuff. He has no idea what the stuff represents, because he's not from around here, you know. I think he's from New Mexico or Texas or somewhere. I'm not sure now. It's in his thing where he's from. But to say he's not relative to crafts of this area. He's no doubt in his fine arts course. He studied it and so forth, and things like that. But you can only get so much out of books. You've got to see the stuff and feel it and work with it and so forth like that. Even these long-established museums are changing their stuff when they find out they're going to get something better or they found out more information. But not so with Renfrew over there. Every now and then I say, well, what can we do here now to things going? We haven't anybody over there that's a student that'll work with things. Take for instance, over there by the roadside, we had an early coverlet factory by the name of Bear. And so I said to him once, there's a project there now. Does somebody get out now and study this factory, you know, and get it together and know something about it, because we do have a bare coverlet, you know. So, but nobody ever, nobody's a student who give any time working with anything. So there's a lot of things that that could be done over there, that Renfrew could, promote on local projects, manufacturers of local products, you know. There's the Mount Etna Ironworks out there along the mountain. And then right in town here, we had the Smith Ironworks that did all those fancy gates and fences, you know, for people around town with the better houses and so forth. And lots of projects that people could get into there. But as I say, why, nobody seems to have any ambition or intuition to want to do something. Everybody wants to come and be entertained. So.
And most of the furniture that's there was from this area, this general area.
No. I'd say most of it's down around the Baltimore area. The only thing from around this area are some Windsor chairs and a couple of looking glasses, and of course the pottery and the china around here. But and the best bed we have upstairs, with the spade foot, that's a New York State bed. That's the best bed. That's the best piece of furniture we have in the house. It's from up around Albany. And so, as I say, there's very little local furniture there at Renfrew that I can say was made in Franklin County.
Are there any clocks that were from the local area there?
Yeah, they've got one clock there. That's a dog. It's a wolf. It's a wolf clock. But whoever made the case must have been blind. Terrible job. Well, it was given to us and we accepted it. Like that. Then we have another clock that's unsigned in the Chippendale style, that came from over York County, that somebody gave her. Mrs. Nicodemus bought that years and years ago. She felt she ought to have a clock. So as far as any furniture, trying to think any furniture that came around this area. Well, there's one or two nondescript viewers that could come from around this area that are nice but no great shapes. And there's a couple of tables. A couple of early tables, those stretcher tables, you know, with the stretchers around and so forth like that. One's an early desk. And there's also a corner cupboard there in the kitchen with the doors missing. It has the date 1767 inlaid across the top. That's a local piece.
Was that in Mrs. Nicodemus's collection?
Yeah.
She had already gotten that?
She had already bought that. There's a few things around there that were local.
The kitchen was renovated, if I recall.
Oh, yes. Yeah, see, one time there was a partition right through the middle of the kitchen. And that partition was removed and thrown into one great big room. That's where this corner cupboard is, back there in the right-hand corner. Mm-hmm. There's a barn back there. And this is like a large fireplace there. And there's a dotry there. And a couple of relay tables. And a large decorated corner cupboard in blue and red and green. The whole thing with it softwood painted, decorated, you might say. I don't know where that comes from. She bought that, where that came from. She bought that from some dealer. I don't know where she bought it, but nevertheless. That holds most of her spatter, I think, on that chair. Then they clear in the front room in there. Why, there's quite a few pieces in there that she got from that Bollmer dealer, Matthews, down there off of Charles Street. That's where she got that pair of big pottery dogs she has, those Strasburg dogs. She got a lot of things from him. So the thing of it is with her, one thing about Mrs. Nicodemus, she somehow had feeling for good things. She had the money, she could have bought a lot of dogs, but she didn't. What she bought was acceptable. It was good quality and tasteful, and all this other stuff, like I said, that was in the geyser in the Nicodemus family, which we have stored and everything. Like, that's another story altogether. And that contains the there's a lot of plated ware and these Rogers figures, you know, and well, anyhow, things are real Victorian in every place. What problems did you foresee which proved to be problems? What problems did you not foresee? Never gave that any thought about what problems did you foresee. Let's see. What sense do you perceive in the concept of the tools, funds, and personnel allowed it? What strength do you perceive in the concept of and the tools, funds, and personnel allowed it?
What were some of the good points about what was being done and the money that was allocated for the people involved in doing it? Were there some strengths in
well,
that?
Well, I would say the good points and things that were done was the maintenance of the property. Putting in that heat control business and general repairs to the building, painting, and then the grounds, keeping the grounds up and all that sort of thing around there. Things you don't think of those things, well, they're things that had to be done, so you didn't think about them. That is, we brought it up at the meeting, well, now this ought to be done, and that ought to be done. And we generally, that is in connection with the barn or the museum, you know. And so that was never any problem. We generally felt, well, it needs taken care of. Ed Miller generally took care of that, you know. He would direct this, why it ought to be done. And of course, if anything, if there were a crisis at any time, why we got Ed Miller to go ahead and straighten it out wherever it would take.
Right.
No surprises that I know of, good or bad. You get a chance that you do over again, then it doesn't matter, or not at all. There isn't much that you could do over again because you solved the problems as they came along. You knew what had to be done, and there were some things, well, there really wasn't much that you can say, well, that was foolish to do that, because there was always a good reason why they should do it.
Several people that you thought were really instrumental in its development. You mentioned Mr. Maxwell and Mr. Miller. Were there any other people that you can think of that really were real key people in
Dr. Guyton's in that. And Helen Hoffman, she had good taste and knew Miss Thigpen was better than any of us. Sorry to lose her, but she was helpful in a lot of ways. But then there's some ways why you disagreed with her, in so much as that she was at the school trying to keep things as Mrs. Nicodemus had them, you know. Then we'd bring up and say, well, that isn't keeping with the museum, you know. So there you are. We are right in our own ranks. We had contention about how should they be? Should they be in keeping with the museum, or is it sentiment? I guess that was a stumbling block all along, the whole way. So,
well, in her will, I think she specifies that it was to be a museum, an early American home. Is that how it was?
Furnished in an early American style.
Uh-huh. So that was Mrs. Nicodemus's thought when she did it.
That was her intention. So that is why I never went along with this park business, because Mrs. Nicodemus was thinking about the museum. That was her pride and joy, and she wanted to preserve because so much of her whole self went into that. And she wanted to try to keep it together. And the other thing is, the Bora wouldn't. If the Bora hadn't accepted it, well, everything was going to be sold. That would have been the end of that.
Do you have any other questions?
No, I think we've pretty well covered everything beautifully. We really appreciate your comments and sharing your knowledge.
I'm tired of the whole thing some way, you know, because after all years and years and years of going over these, I wouldn't call them problems, but you go to a meeting and we bring up something on the agenda. You'd spend all afternoon on one item, you know, and we had already decided what we were going to do about it, but a couple of the board members wanted to put their input into it, so you just had to sit there and listen to them. There was an awful lot of time wasted, that is. And it had chiefly to do with the people who were bringing up the questions and about what we should do and everything. Had nothing to do with the status of the museum. It was sort of how they felt about it. Oh, I don't think we ought to do this because of this and so forth and so forth, so forth like that. And then I'd say about, well, but that that isn't the idea. The thing is we have a museum here to run, and well, anyhow, we blundered along, and I guess that was the thing that I minded the most was you gave it so much time, you might say, and didn't resolve anything in a lot of meetings.
Well, I thank you so much for our meeting here today, because I've learned a number of things. Is there anything else that...
anything else that you would want to share that you can think of?
No, I think we covered everything pretty well. Except I could say some things, I'd be stepping on somebody else's toes, you know, and there's no sense. That's gone, and like our, this new curator we have, this Jim Smith, he's doing a good job there, and that is for what he's doing, you know, and so forth like that. Which I say it doesn't concern the museum. And, but that's his thing. That's what he wants to, that's the way his concept.